Hello, everybody. Welcome to our third program when we are beginning a new book, The Light, Letters on Occult Meditation video commentary. And we are in a new section. It's called The Cord of the Ego. And as I've been saying, you know, rumor has it, occult rumor has it, that Master DK was a very important official in Pythagoras' school. He was known, we're told, as Cleinias the Just, Greek. And obviously he would have absorbed, as all associated with Pythagoras had to absorb, the interface between music and mathematics. So that's what we're looking at here. And let's see what Master DK has to say. When I use the term reciprocal vibration, what do I mean? I mean the adaptation of the personality or lower self to the ego or higher self. Now, in this case, we're looking at the personality, we're looking at the higher self as if it need not be the spiritual triad, which is the true ego or higher self. It can be considered to be the consciousness within the egoic lotus, which is the vehicle of the true ego and is that which the aspirant and disciple must first contact. So just as long as we're aware, when the term ego is used, it can mean or can appear in its higher use, which is the spiritual triad, but also it most frequently represents the soul on its own level, its own customary level, the level that is most constantly discussed, and that is the level of the higher mental plane, either on the third subplane of the higher mental plane or the second subplane of the higher mental plane, where those who are approaching the first initiation and taking it and the initiations beyond until the destruction of the causal body will focus their egoic lotus on the second subplane. So with that clearly in mind, what do I mean? He says, by reciprocal vibration, I mean the adaptation of the personality or lower self. We do have to have those terms and their equivalents clearly in mind. To the ego or the higher self. The dominating of the personality ray by the ray of the ego, which incidentally is also the ray that is found as one of the rays of the spiritual triad. In other words, if you are a third ray soul, the monastic permanent atom will be partially ruled by the third ray, the Buddhic permanent atom partially ruled by the third ray, and the Atmic permanent atom partially ruled by the third ray. The dominating of the personality ray by the ray of the ego and the combining of their tones, and that will give us an interval. An interval is considered to be two notes. Bum, bum, ga-da-da-da-bum. That interval is the interval of a fifth. But if I were to make a chord of the interval, I would have at least three notes. Ya-da-dee-da-dum. Excuse my morning voice that I've managed to drag into the latter part of the day. All right. Times are different now than when I used to teach singing in the university. Seems like long ago. Anyway, the adaptation of the personality or lower self to the ego, the dominating of the personality ray by the ray of the ego, and the combining of their tones. Now, different languages used at different points. At different points. I mean the blending of the primary color of the higher self and the secondary hue of the lower self until beauty is achieved. Well, you know how it is when the orchestra is tuning up. There are a lot of unpleasant sounds until one gets the other notes of the instrument based upon usually the note A to be harmonically aligned. Of course, we don't have a true A. Sometimes 440 vibrations per second, sometimes 447, sometimes in the old days, maybe 416. We have not settled upon the proper A. We don't know it, but we have guesses, and we try to move to that point of knowledge where we will know what the A should be. Interesting that it is a fifth ray note. Was it Archimedes who said, give me the proper point to stand on and I will move the world? And for those who wish to understand the use of sound in a magical sense, we have to begin with that proper frequency, whatever it may be. And there are all kinds of speculations about what it may be. So, now the word primary color, we have to be careful about it, because the word primary is so often associated, when used with the word ray, with the monad. And in this case, not the monad. He's talking about the higher self, but there is a little bit of difficulty here, and I'll tell you why as soon as I find a little Alice Bailey book and move to page 177 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. And I'll show it to you. And we see that the primary color, this could be an occult hint, it would be very obscure if it were. The primary color of the higher self is in the left-hand column. We have a nine-fold choice of rays for the ego, in the higher sense of ego. The three major rays can each be subdivided in connection with the ego, which can mean the higher self, which can mean the spiritual triad, into three divisions, and this is little appreciated. Well, one of these columns, and I think, you know, we have to talk about it as the left-hand column, I think, is associated with one of the monadic rays. I don't really know which, but it doesn't change. And since the monadic ray changes not throughout the eon, and maybe we're talking about the major monadic ray, then indeed the word primary is suitable for the left-hand column, because it just continues incarnation after incarnation. And when there is a difference in soul ray, as sometimes happens, let's say the sixth ray moving to the third or to the second, both of which are possible, or the fourth ray to the third or the second, that would occur in the right-hand column, but not in the left-hand column, as far as I know. So the primary of a man, the primary ray, whether it's the lower monadic ray or the final major monadic ray, is sustained and does not change. We're told the primary ray changes once in the eon. And in that particular case, that fluid term eon, eon means the duration of a solar system. So if we search very deeply, maybe the word primary is not varying from his usual use of associated with the monad, because the left-hand column is associated with the monad, as far as I can understand at this point in my degree of ignorance. You know, we all have to measure our degree of ignorance if we possibly can. Changes, though, in the right-hand column are possible as soul ray changes occur. The sub-ray of the monad is the soul ray from a certain perspective. And the lower monadic ray is a sub-ray of the major ray of the monad. This is what I've been able to gather through my studies, and it's my hypothesis of the moment. Okay, so then going back, those two pages in Cosmic Fire, 176 and 177, are of very great value when trying to understand the higher rays in our energy system. Okay, so he says here, I, and let's make sure I'm getting this correctly. Yes, I think so. He says, I mean the blending of the primary color of the higher self. I assume that would be, usually when we talk about primary colors, we mean basically red, blue, and green, or some, you know, close variation of those which blended together on the color wheel make for white light. That's a fascinating thing to see. I remember the day long ago at a science fair in grade school when a friend of mine showed the color wheel in a lecture at a science fair. And it was a combination of red, kind of maybe kind of magenta, and the blue, I don't know what shade, and the green. And he spun the wheel and everything turned white. And that was sort of counter-prismatic, you might say. Usually when we think about prisms, we think about the white light being broken up, subdivided into rainbow-like colors, and the primary colors being red, blue, and green. That's how D.K. refers to the different solar systems at least, but maybe to get the best white, you have to alter them just a little. Anyway, this is my little digression on the word primary. Because it's one of those words that's associated with monad. And in addition to that, it's associated with three fundamental colors, which are the contributors to white light when they are, I guess the word would be in this case, synthesized. Yeah, primary color. So anyway, I mean the blending of the primary color of the higher self, and I've just shown maybe how the higher self as the spiritual triad does have the influence of the primary, which is the monad, with the secondary hue of the lower self until beauty is achieved. But basically, what we're talking about here, this really means in this context, blending, I'll use ordinary words, soul and personality. At first, there is dissonance and discord. You know, they are fighting each other, and this is often the case with Gemini representing the higher and lower pairs of opposites. You know, if you have Mars in the sign Gemini, such as in the chart of the United States exists, then the two Geminian brothers representing the higher and lower pairs of opposites will fight each other. And for a long time, this may be the case for people passing through this stage of transition to the domination by the higher of the pairs of opposites, the soul of the lower. I mean, pairs of opposites, there are many, you know, spirit and matter is another one. But usually at first, when we're dealing with these matters, we have simply the soul and personality. At first, there is dissonance and discord. You know, the tuning up. And if I want the just excuse me. Not only is this voice not doing so well today, but I'm older now. There's a lot of one is the tritone. You'll recognize that from West Side Story where he sings Maria. That's the way that song begins. And then resolves into the perfect fifth. Dum ti dum, dum ti dum. But there's a lot of tuning that goes on there between the two, and maybe the tritone, along with the major seventh. Di-da, di-da-da. That those two intervals are the most dissonant. In other words, in the normal octave, the way we normally divide it in Western music, because it's divided differently in other kinds of music, we have some very dissonant intervals. And maybe the most dissonant intervals are da-da. That's called the second, and it's the lower second. It's not a major second. It's the lower of the two seconds. If I dee-da-dum-dum-dum, that is the second we usually hear. But the discord is dum-dum, dum-dum. Then there's the Maria tritone, dum-dee-um, which used to be called the devil in music. And, you know, if you want to have ways of remembering this. And then there's South Pacific, you know, by Rodgers and Hammerstein, that song called Valley High. Dee-dee-da, dum-da. And that is the third of the really dissonant intervals. And they have to be resolved into something more pleasant to the ear and more maybe vibrationally familiar and coherent. Let's excuse that little music lesson with a voice that seems no longer to work. Okay, at first there is dissonance and discord, a clashing of the colors. We oftentimes hear of people's taste in color and whether they choose to put together two colors which clash or set each other off in a disagreeable manner, and a fight between the higher and the lower. Well, I think we've all been through that. And when we, or are going through it, and when we emerge out the other end, it is a relief to come into harmony. And when we're dealing with the fourth ray of harmony through conflict, I think we spend quite a few lives under fourth ray influence, one way or another. If not the soul, then certainly the personality or the mind. And DK talks about the fourth ray mind as a little elemental that loves to fight. It's in esoteric psychology too. The little lord, it's called, that loves to fight, something of that nature. But then comes resolution into a different type of interval, which is much more agreeable and mathematically coherent. Maybe more rational in the mathematical sense. I have, you know, books on the scale and different tuning systems. And when you're dealing with the fundamental intervals, it's like 1-to-1 or 2-to-1, an octave. And you have 3-to-2, a fifth, a perfect fifth. And you have 4-to-3, a third, might be the fourth. The dum dum da dum, you know, here comes the bride. That's the way to identify the movement from red to green, and the fourth. And then, you know, the tetrachy sets it all up in a way. 4-to-3, 5-to-4 is the major third. 6-to-5, I think it's the minor third. 7-to-6, I'm not sure whether it's ever comes out even, and so forth. You keep on having a higher frequency above a lower frequency, and it gets tighter and tighter. And I could go to those books right now, but you can find that if you just go to the internet and look at different tuning systems. But let's just say that the basis of it all is this famous Pythagorean triangle called the 3-4-5 triangle. So the hypotenuse is the five, the upward leg is the four, and the lower base is the smallest, which is the three. And the proportions from one side to another are some of our major intervals. You know, let's see what is found there. The four over the three, the five over the four, the five over the three, those are the ones that are found. Four, three, yeah, five, four, five, three. And they will represent the fourth, and I think the fourth is the fourth, four, three, and five thirds, I'm forgetting at the moment what it is, five over three, but five over four is the major third, or the happy third, we might call it. You know, instead of green sleeves, dum ta da dee, dum ta da dee da da dee da dum. That's the sad third, the minor third. I think it's six and five together. But I think, is it four and three? Let's take a look. Well, lo and behold, I was tempted. And we start on the note C, and that's the perfect unison. We go to the minor second, which is dissonant. We go to the major second, which is a whole tone from the bass note, and that is less dissonant. The augmented third, well, if we really discriminate finely in the tuning systems and don't use the tempered scale, then it is distinct from the minor third, but usually in the tempered scale, it's, well, let's get the right note here. So that's a C to an E flat. And the major third is the perfect fourth is Here Comes the Bride. Dum, dum, ta-dum. Okay. Then again, the augmented fourth and the diminished fifth are pretty much in the tempered scale the same. And that's our Maria from West Side Story. Dum, dee, dum. Okay, and then comes the perfect fifth. Ya-da-da-da-dum, dum-bum-bum. And the same thing happens with the augmented fifth and the minor sixth. That's a sad interval. You know, it's found in the spiritual Let My People Go. So along with the minor third, the green sleeves interval, dum, da, da, dum, and then Let My People Go, dum, dee, da, 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 da. So those are the two, well, they're minor intervals, and they take us backwards. I have a paper on this, and I should make it available. Then My Bonnie Lies Over the Ocean. That's the next one, the major sixth. Dum, 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 dee, da, 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 dee, dum. And that's a cheerful interval. And then we have two more. See, the major, the augmented sixth and the minor seventh are the same. Dum, dum, ba, da, dum, ba, da, da, dum, da, dum, da. But it doesn't have the leading tone of this dissonant interval that comes from, you know, the song Bally High, or at least it was used that way. And finally we get to the perfect octave. Okay. So this is music theory made easy. Yeah, and here's the way these things are drawn out. And I want to find something that gives us a sense of proportion of what numbers go over what numbers. And I'm not sure that I'm going to find it here. Let's see. I'll try this. What I would suggest here is looking this up in the Wikipedia. It's a quite a full article, and it gives us a lot of insight into how to compare these notes. We have to at least be able to identify the notes on the stave. And the way I used to learn this, or that we were taught, when you have the spaces, it spells the word face, F-A-C-E, the four spaces, one above the other. And when you have the notes on the line in the treble clef, it spells every good boy does fine. A little bit sexist, but that's how they did it. Every, the bottom line, second line, good, G. Third line, B for boy. Then the fourth line, D for does. And the topmost line, fine. Every good boy does fine. So we have to at least get that much clear. Okay. Well, there's so much in the on the internet, but just to give you an idea without going into this exhaustively, because it is a subject all to itself. If we start with do, or the sort of red note, the middle C, which is about, by one method of frequency estimation, 256 vibrations per second, then a unison is the simple one-to-one ratio. And then the major second is D. That ratio is 9:8. And the major third, I'm over here, is 5:4. That's at the proportion 5:4. So right away, we see that's in the famous Pythagorean triangle. Then we have fa, which is here comes the bride, as it were. And that's the proportion 4:3. And then we have the perfect fifth, which is so important in terms of the relationship of the soul to personality, as we're going to see shortly. And that's a 3:2 proportion. And earlier I was looking for the 5:3. That's also part of the Pythagorean triangle, the hypotenuse to the base. And it's, let's see, that's 5:3. I think 5:6 is Okay. And then we have the final note from do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do. And that's our Bally High from Rodgers and Hammerstein, South Pacific. And in between are all the other proportions in this particular article. You know, you can Well, there's so many articles of this kind, and they are expressed in different ways with different exponents, and the different Greek modes are brought in here. And here is, kind of a circle of fifths. Anyway, from an article like this, a lot can be gathered. DK is nowhere near this complex as he's presenting the tum, 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 tum. That's the chord he's presenting, starting on the bass note C. Yum, pum, pum, pum. And out of those four notes, he makes quite a story. Here are some of the different modes and their proportions. And the modes have, you know, different half steps and whole steps. Well, not to go too far with it, but if he says the cosmic roll of fa, which is the dum dum da dum, that's the green note, we can ally this with the secret doctrine quite well. So there's so much here to learn about harmony. And when we combine the fourth ray and the fifth ray, that's what we are going to find. A deep research into harmony and the effects that it will have upon the human being, the human being's health, the human being's psyche, and so forth. Now, you know, pardon that deviation. It was not planned, but I should know better that when I get into this subject, I'm going to somehow take a trip. And, the Wikipedia and other sources, we can look at the mathematical proportions and intervals. So, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm going to look that up right here just for a moment. And I'm going to put it into Google. What an amazing resource we do have here. Mathematical proportions and musical intervals. And let's see where this takes us. Okay, well, here's one right here. How do you count musical intervals? Unfortunately, these are actually little programs, so I can't be running those right now. Mathematical proportions and musical intervals. And what is a mathematical interval? It's a range of numbers between two given numbers, including all of the real numbers. So now we really start getting into the mathematics. Musical ratio and musical proportion. I think that's what I'm not sure that that's what we were studying, but here it does give some of the major intervals. When I say major, I mean important ones. The octave at 2:1, the perfect fifth. Well, let me go here. The octave at 2:1, the perfect fifth at 3:2, the perfect fourth at 4:3, and the Pythagorean whole tone at 9:8. And we can see how these ratios are, how they are derived. from the mathematical perspective. You would have to study this, you know, if you were in Pythagoras' school, and pretty much the coming years when the schools appear, they will be, in a way, Pythagoras' schools. He's the great educator, and Master DK is assisting him. Here's the Pythagorean whole tone, but it goes into a lot of complexity. And it deals with intervals that DK has associated with different vehicles of the etheric vehicles of the personality. Okay. So that's just a little taste, and of course, I'm getting myself over my head here because I naturally want to explain all this as much as I can, but the time does not allow. At least you have the idea that when you start dealing with certain major proportions or ratios, I guess I should call them that, the result in music is a certain kind of interval. And maybe the major intervals are considered to be the unison, the major third, and that would be a 5-4. And then the fourth, the here comes the bride interval, dum, dum, da-dum. That's the 4-3. Then the perfect fifth, which has so much to do with the soul. Bum, 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 bum. And that's 3-2. And, you know, there are others in between, naturally, bringing the in the intervals using the chromatic scale, which is ascending or descending by half steps. Etc. That's the chromatic scale. And finally, the 2-1, the octave. Bum, 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 bum. That's the octave. Bum, bum. Oh, if I ever have to listen to this myself, I'm probably going to regret having done all this. But anyway, it is something that we students of esotericism, you know, we have to have this kind of knowledge if we're going to be educated in the Pythagorean system. And we have to remember that the Tibetan himself is a, from one perspective, a great Pythagorean, second in command, you know, with Pythagoras' school at Crotona in Asia Minor. Okay. Now going on, where did we go? The blending of the primary color of the higher self, and I've explained how that primary is either a secondary use of the word, primary, or how we can touch into the monad when talking about the higher self, with the secondary hue, sort of the heart center hue. No, it's not the heart center. The higher self would be more the heart center, and the personality would be called the lower self. So that is a major blending, and it has to be tuned up, and I've explained now what it means to get the proportion exactly correct so that to the ear, everything is in its proper place. At first, there is dissonance and discord, a clashing of the colors, so we spend lives that are full of conflict, basically. It's just a simple way of describing it. And a fight between the higher and lower. Won't you be happy that I'm moving on now? But, you know, we haven't done 1% of what there is to learn there. Every single interval as its proportion. Dum da 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 dee da 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 dee, dum da da dee, dum da da dee, dum da dum dee, dum da dum dee. Oops, I left one out. Dee da, dum da dee. Whoops. I'm leaving out the minor seventh and finally the major seventh. Dum, dee, dum. Every one of those has its proper proportion depending upon the mode we may be in or how we're dividing the scale. You know, in Western music, we divide the scale. In an approximate way so that we can easily move from key to key. If we're too exact, it's jarring to move from key to key in music. That's it. That's the minor seventh. And it has its particular proportion, and then dum dee. That's a very dissonant interval, but it's got a leading tone, and it always promises something more. It promises resolution in the octave. Bum 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 bum. The 2-to-1 ratio. Okay. This concert will now end, I think. But as time progresses, and later with the aid of the master, harmony of color and tone, maybe they're the same thing, is produced. Oh, yes, he says, a synonymous matter. If you have harmony of color, you have harmony of tone. If you have harmony of tone, you have harmony of color. Until eventually you will have the basic note of matter. Bum. The major third of the aligned personality. Bum, bum, bum. The dominant fifth of the ego. You know, the dome, the head, the Leo, the domination. Dum, dum, yadadadadum. Followed by the full chord of the monad or spirit. Bum, 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 bum. I'm holding back on that higher note because it would be excruciating to the ears. Okay. So when I read this, you know, at first I said, wow, this is, he's speaking to me. And, you know, the training that I've had, and probably a lot of you too in music, allows us to maybe turn the musical key to the secret doctrine. There's a mathematical, psychological, you know, there are a bunch of keys to the secret doctrine. And in one of the footnotes that we'll come to when we study, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire and Death, he lists these different keys, and this, you know, like this, the key you turn. But it's not so different, is it? The key of music in which you are in, and the key that you are striking, as if, let's say, on an instrument or a piano, are quite close to the idea of a key which opens the door. Sound can open a door. And it has to be the right sound. So I guess the concert was not quite over. Forgive me. And now we'll go on. I realize, okay, how I've just done it now is maybe a little chaotic, and there's, you know, more systematic ways to operate. But just as long as we understand that the integers, when placed in a ratio, indicate a particular interval of music. And the particular interval has psychological and spiritual meanings. It's a long time before we have a happy personality, and we're probably much more dealing with whatever the proportion is, the green sleeves minor, dun, dun, before we're happy, and deal with dun, 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 okay? And the same with the minor sixth. They all have something nostalgic about them that is released when we get to the major. Dun, dun. All right. I just can't seem to get off it, can I? It's a sad thing when you get hooked like that. So this is all, you know, all music theory, you know. And maybe I'll be fortunate enough if I go to Mr. Google, new tab, and mathematical proportion of the minor third in music. 6 to 5. And it depends upon the tuning system. So 6 to 5, and the inverse is the major sixth. And I think we looked at that before as 5 to 3. Now I'm going to ask another question. Mathematical proportion of the minor sixth in music. Let's see what we have. Oh, and maybe not quite as clear here. The minor sixth in music, which is the dum da dum, di da 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 dum. It's not showing it exactly. Well, you know, there's some details here that, what is a minor sixth above C? And it gives us the sixth interval. Now let's see if I go here and you can see it. And then the major sixth is there too. In music theory, let's see, major seventh, minor third is 5 to 6. Major seventh is something else. The tritone is 32 to 45, or 45 to 32. And that is a kind of, it doesn't come out even. It's the devil in music, as they say. And the minor sixth, this one is good. Maybe we can find this. And it might give us what we need. Let's just see. Yeah. Maybe it gives us what we need. And this has to do with the scales, intervals, and ratios. Okay. There's quite a bit that's here. And some of it is quite mathematical. And we understand there's different ways of dividing the octave. And here are the mathematical methods by which we can do that. These are called frequency ratios. I'm after that minor sixth. and hoping to find it, we have had the 6 to 5, which looks like it's the minor third, and then let's see if I can go back one step. And we have ratios, golden ratios, and things of that nature. The minor third, 6 to 5, and the minor sixth looks like 8 to 5. 5 to 3 is the major sixth. This is it right here. And 8 to 5 is the minor sixth. It's not quite a double. The octave is 2 to 1. Dong, dong. No. Let's see. But bum, bum, that looks like 8 to 5. And bum, bum, that looks like 5 to 3. Hmm. 5 to 4 is bum, bum. And 6 to 5 is bum, bum. So you can feel the difference in the mood from those different intervals. And that's what my paper is about. It's, you know, it's about different kinds of chords and so forth, the esoteric in music. Well, the concert was not over, was it? All right. So, getting back to our the Tibetan's presentation of the subject. At first, there is dissonance, a clashing of the colors and a fight between the higher and lower. But as time progresses and later with the aid of the master, harmony of color and tone is produced. That's our goal, especially as the fourth kingdom in nature. That's our goal, harmony. And harmony of color and tone is a synonymous matter until eventually you will have the basic note of matter. Dum, I did this before. Dum, dum, that's it. Some people have perfect pitch. You know, I have a perfect pitch pipe. Dum, the major third of the aligned personality and the dominant fifth of the ego, followed by the full chord of the monad or spirit. Bum, bum. Okay. Is that lesson now at last over? I feel like I'm two selves at the moment. One that wants to run away with the musical interpretations, and the other that is aware that after all, we're dealing with a particular book here. And we must not go too much into detail regarding all of these intervals and chords. Now, note this, this is important. It is the dominant we seek at adeptship. Yadadadam-tum, perfect fifth, fifth initiation, and earlier the perfect third of the personality. Perfect third of the personality, and the dominant at mastership. But that's not, this is not the perfected third. Listen to this one. Tum-tum. No, it's not the perfected third. It's the minor third. And it is backward looking and nostalgic and sad. At a certain point, DK describes the sad personality, an old figure, worn and tired, you know, from much experience, a sad figure. And that is pretty much the minor third of the personality, but it all brightens up, and the perfect third brings in buddhi. Pum, pum. And the buddhic energy is love, wisdom, and it brightens everything and brings the personality into a condition of greater radiance rather than veiled beneath a nostalgic cloud. During our various incarnations, we strike and ring the changes on all the intervening notes. That's the chromatic scale, let us call it. Da 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 di da 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 di dum 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 da dum ta. That took us to mastership, striking and ringing the changes on all the intervening notes. And if we want to get to the monad, we have to keep going. Di da yum dum da da. Dum, dum. Whoops, I got a little flat there. Dum, dum. That's the major sixth, and then dum, and this is the one I have trouble with. Dum, dum, dum. That's the minor seventh. And then we're almost at the monad. Dum, dee. That's our belly high. And then we're finally at the monad. Dum, dum. Made it. Okay. Well, I have a feeling that these questions of tuning, different kinds of intervals, different kinds of chords, I think they're very literal in a way. And that if we had the occult sound, we would recognize the interval or even the chord that we are enacting or trying to enact in a particular incarnation. So, during our various incarnations, we strike and ring the changes on all the intervening notes. And sometimes, you know, this is what I've been trying to say, and I got it from him. Sometimes our lives are major and sometimes minor, but always they tend to flexibility and greater beauty. Well, can you have a beautiful life that's minor? Sad, backward-looking, nostalgic. I sometimes don't know what Irish music would be without the minor. You know, Ireland has this powerful seventh ray on some level. I suspect it's their soul. And their music is filled with mood. And some of it is so sad and backward-looking to a time of a greater beauty, perhaps. And without those minor intervals, I cannot conceive of what Irish music would be. And of course, it has extended somewhat into Scottish music and into English music. I think that in the new school of the Bodhisattva, which will be largely a secondary school in Ireland, music will play such a very important transformative role. You know the story of Pythagoras. He was out for a walk and he saw a strange scene, a man who had been disappointed in love. I don't know how he found this out, or maybe he just knew. He was piling wood around the home of his former lover and going to burn it all down and maybe her with it. And then he, you know, was carrying an instrument. And he began to play in a mode, a Greek mode, I don't know which was much more conducive to love and kindness. And as he played, the man stopped in his tracks and began to gather the wood back together and then went away. So, you know, the power of the different modes in Greek, in Greece, and I suppose, especially also in Indian music, have a very strong effect. That power has a very strong effect upon the psyche. And we don't know much about it yet. Maybe one day we did, but there were even some modes which were considered unlawful because they contributed to the disintegration of the state of all things. When I first heard that, I thought it was a great offense to prohibit certain modes and organizations of the scale to be played for such a reason. But now, the further I get into it, the more I realize that something occult lay behind it, and it may have indeed have been the case. So anyway, during our various incarnations, who knows what's going on right now, do you, do I? We strike and ring the changes on all the intervening notes, intervening between the major intervals, which represent perfected personality, soul domination, and then finally monad, with the spiritual triad right up there above the note G. We strike and ring the changes on all the intervening notes, all. And it all depends on how we divide the scale too. The Western method of division into 12 semitones is not necessarily standard everywhere. And sometimes our lives are major and sometimes minor, but always they tend to flexibility and greater beauty. So what do you think? Are you having a major life in terms of the major key, the brighter intervals? Or are you having a minor life, more subdued and more resonant with the minor intervals, the minor third, the minor sixth, and so forth, even the minor second, which is very dissonant? Just pause for a moment, try to think in these terms. No. I'm thinking of an asteroid called Orpheus, and I have it prominent in my chart, and it has the tendency to produce music that is slow and sad and dirge-like, at least according to the usual descriptions. And we have Orpheus in Greek mythology. He went to the underworld and gained permission to take behind him his love, who had died, and Pluto released her as long as Orpheus would not look back to assure himself that Eurydice, however it's pronounced in the different languages, to be assured that Eurydice was not following, was following him. But Orpheus, you know, being very sensitive and untrusting, looked back, and she disappeared. Well, you know, he was said to have been able to be such a master of his instrument, whatever it was it lute and song, or was it a wind instrument, that he could charm and deeply affect anyone who heard his music. But you can imagine that this was a very crushing and sad thing for him. He didn't have the faith. He looked back. And what would have been a successful liberation of Eurydice from the lower worlds turned out to be a tragedy due to his lack of belief. And so, you know, his songs, I can only imagine, got more and more mournful and sadder, you know. And I've kind of tested this out, and I do think there is an asteroid that they have named, or maybe which has named itself, called Orpheus. And I do think that if people are into music, it inclines them to create that kind of slow and sad music. It's certainly been the case in my own life, you know, since it's been so close to the planet Venus, which, you know, is has been used in vocal music and all that. So sometimes our lives are major and sometimes they are minor. Well, Ian, let's put it this way, so we don't get confused. In the major key or in the minor key, or a mixture, maybe a really even mixture. So what is it for you? Is it in the major key, the minor key, or is it some kind of mixture? Just pause for a moment and try to realize what may be the story. You know, I think when the joy of the soul enters, as eventually it must, the life is lived, the personality is life is lived more in the major key. I can attest to the fact that in my life there's been a lot of the minor key in this incarnation. Like True Confessions, you know, there's a marvelous sonata by Chopin which includes something we call the funeral march. You've heard it. Etc. And it used to be the kind of thing that I was playing all the time, born that way. So I can attest to the minor key often. But then there have been, you know, great moments when the major key took over. You can't help but listen to the overture of The Marriage of Figaro by Mozart without entering resolutely the major key. It's just so joyous, you know. And even the William Tell overture, the old story, what's the difference between an intellectual and an average individual, and the intellectual can listen to the William Tell overture without thinking of the Lone Ranger. I don't think I ever made it. Well, you know, we can go back into our life in terms of the kind of music that we appreciate and what really warms us. And sometimes, at first, we don't like a piece of music, and it really grows on us. We seem to change eras. story from my own life is I loved classical music. And there were certain kinds of romantic music at the beginning that I had no particular use for because of the types of harmonic changes, and it didn't agree with me, so I thought. And came the time at the National Music Camp, which I attended for 6 years straight, lifesaver, you know, when this big festival choir was doing the Brahms Requiem, and Deutsches Requiem. And at first, the harmonies used by Brahms were not appealing to me. But after several rehearsals, I found a change taking place. You know, it was a choir of maybe 400 or 500 people. And those harmonies, it's like it was a transition from the classical period of music into the romantic period. And from that time on, it became one of my great favorites, you know, even more so than the Verdi Requiem, which was extremely operatic and exciting and so forth. Somehow we did all these requiems, you know, the Berlioz Requiem, Verdi, Mozart Requiem, and the Brahms Requiem turned out to be my favorite of all. So certain music grows on you, maybe. You're unfamiliar with it, but it takes you through the various centuries and puts you in tune with the zeitgeist, you know, the spirit of the times. And we have to be sensitive to that. And when certain kinds of music fascinates you, there may be the indication of an incarnation in that fascination. I remember the lutenist of the early 16th century, Ponce. I've always not wanted to go back to Spain or to be in Spain. And when I first heard these, I don't know, are they dances or ballads or whatever they are, by Ponce, I froze in my tracks. I just couldn't even move. And they were so beautiful and so arresting to me. And it just, you know, pinpointed some kind of Spanish incarnation. So you have to follow the hints wherever they take you. And music can be a real indicator of where we have been, where we long to return, where we don't want to return, you know, et cetera. Be aware. And certain works of art, the same, and certain types of nature, surroundings, the same. I remember always being fascinated by birch trees, which are white. So I always wanted to go north and north and north where the birches could be found, you know, before the tree line quit. And I just know, you know, it's an echo of something past. So be alert and allow these vibrational indicators to reveal to you who you have been and maybe who you are. Of course, ultimately, we are being, but I'm talking about in the world of Maya. So, I don't seem to be making really rapid progress here because it maybe it indicates that I'm falling into my anecdotage, as they say. You know, read three words and come up with a story. Anyway, in due time, each note fits into a chord, into its chord. The chord of the spirit. Each chord forms part of a phrase. You know, a phrase is like a completed idea in music. The phrase or group to which the chord belongs. And the phrase goes to the completion of 1/7 of the whole, and the entire 7 sections then, you know, think of the rounds, or maybe a solar systemic round, the entire 7 sections then complete the sonata of the solar system. Wow. A part of the threefold masterpiece of the Logos or God, the master musician, in this case, the solar Logos. I mean, we do have a planetary symphony also working out. But this is all about the master musician and his sonata and his threefold masterpiece, which probably has to do with the major solar systems, the 7 having to do with all the solar systems, which eventually appear to round out the creative work of a solar Logos. It's such a beautiful kind of analogy here. Well, I think it's not an analogy. He's talking in factual terms. This is what's going on. A great composition is being composed by the master musician. And our little intervals and chords and phrases and the little piece of music which represents our little incarnation, all those fit into this great creative effort. You know, this is all part of the musical key to the secret doctrine. You just got to read that again, you know. It's just shudderingly beautiful. During our various incarnations, we strike and ring the changes on all the intervening notes. And sometimes our lives are major. And sometimes minor, that is in major and minor keys, but always they tend to flexibility and greater beauty. In due time, each note, you know, including the intervening notes, of course, each note fits into its chord, and the chord probably in some way, as you try to tune it up, describes the life in some holistic manner. You know, if you're living a life that's, well, let's see if that's the right note. Yeah. If you're living this kind of life, it's different from living this kind of life. With the leading tone, taking you to the monad. And if you're living this kind of life, bum, 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 you may have the unhappy personality. But still, here's one which would give you a not too joyous personality, but it would resolve into some higher possibility. See if I can sing it. Bum, 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 bee-dum. Bum, 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 bee-dum. Okay. So we live out a chord, you know, and That's how we're preparing the final chord of the spirit, which is perfect. Bum, 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 bum. The perfect chord. Each chord forms part of a phrase, the phrase or group to which the chord belongs. So, you know, right there, group consciousness is coming into the picture. And we are contributing our chord with others contributing their chord. And when well attuned to each other, we're going to make a beautiful phrase. It's hard for me to describe what a phrase of music is, but it's a completed idea. It may repeat itself, it may go on to another phrase. And it seems to require members of a group to complete it. Well, maybe you have a phrase in your own life, but when it comes to group consciousness, maybe everyone contributes something to the completion of that phrase or completed musical idea. And the phrase goes to the completion of 1/7 of the whole. It's a piece, you know. 1/7 of the whole composition. And the entire 7 sections then complete the sonata. Most sonatas simply have 3 movements, you know, maybe four, but not 7, at least among, you know, human composers. The entire 7 sections then complete the sonata of this solar system, a part of the threefold masterpiece of the Logos or God. And I look at those as the 3 major solar systems, a part of the threefold masterpiece of the Logos or God, the master musician. Well, maybe I've been a little bit self-indulgent there, you know. My whole life, I don't know if this is meant to be autobiographical, but if it helps, has been very heavily invested in music, in vocal music mostly, in opera and German Lieder and art songs and all those, I don't know, fine arts, you might say, involving the voice. So that when I get a chance to dilate on these things a bit, it may not be the most coherent presentation, but it is the result of the enthusiasm I feel. When I first heard the songs of Schubert, as sung by wonderful German artists, Fischer Dieskau and Hermann Prey, and some others, during the 1960s and 70s, I just knew that I had been there and been an associate of that kind of group that was producing that kind of response to German poetry. Heinrich Heine being among the most prominent of the poets that was being set to music, and sometimes some pretty bad stuff, pretty bad poetry being set to music. They just grabbed anything they could and they wrote it down on a napkin in the middle of a bar, perhaps, and then it turned out to be a quite beautiful piece of music. But maybe the poetry wasn't so great. So follow the hints. There are so many musical hints that take us to different times and different locales. I would call these things reincarnational triggers. And in a way, they just don't lie, you know. There's something within you already established that is really resonant to the old music you are hearing. Maybe even Gregorian chant. It might awaken in us the memory of lives spent in a cloister of some kind, a monastery, a convent. Some DK tells us that his disciples have spent one or two lives in such organizations or cloistered facilities, either in the East or the West. And maybe Gregorian chant will awaken some kind of recollection. I know that when my wife Tuya and I, we go to Tromsø, far north in Norway, where the farthest north university in the world is existing. And we go to this convent, and it's quite strict convent. And I think the name of it is something like Totus Tuus. You know, my Latin is non-existent, but it basically means entirely for you. And a few times a day, and maybe especially in the evening, the nuns are gathering there to sing the Gregorian chants, certain of them that are appropriate for the day. And we are always attracted to hear them sing. The music is very simple, and it's in unison. It's non-harmonic. It took a long time for the evolution from unison music to harmonic music to evolve. And as with all things, the new development is rejected. I'm remembering from music history how it was that the third was introduced. They didn't mind moving in parallel fifths. Dum, dum, da-da-da-dum. You could move with those two notes, take them up, take them down. You could, in pitch, you could move with parallel fourths. Dum, dum, da-dum, dum, dum. Bum, 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 bum. You could move from fourth to fourth, but when it came to introducing the third, whether major or minor, into music to make a chord, there was a huge resistance. And why? Because it was no longer considered to be heavenly, otherworldly. It was considered to be, of all things, too personal. Tum ba da dum, tum bi da dum. So I've just introduced the third. And what does DK say? That the personality is indicated by the major third, 5 to 4, or the minor third, 6 to 5, that it is personal. And there was such a medieval resistance against introducing the personal into the supreme, serene, otherworldly, heavenly approach. So they realized it. And once you introduced other harmonies, medievalism began to break down, and we were into the Renaissance, which allowed a much fuller scope of expression for the human being. But there are some strange anomalies, relatively early pre-Renaissance music is strange and unusual, and carries a certain quality that is found in the most contemporary music. what we consider to be dissonances, clashing chords, clashing intervals, disharmonies. They use them all the time. And they, you know, didn't worry about it. But our harmonic sensitivity increased for many years. And from the time of the Renaissance to the time of the late-ish 19th century, the laws of harmony prevailed, what we call harmony, which was always having a key note as a reference point. You were in a certain key, or you modulated to another key, but the key structure was definite. And you knew where you were oriented, but then it all started to break down. And the chaos of the human mind and emotional nature reflected this breakdown, or maybe I can say that the music was a reflection of the disintegration of harmonic man. And we got into intellectual 12-tone systems which sounded very cacophonous compared with this long age of harmony beginning from the even the early Renaissance to the late Romantic period. But other composers came in, and they may have started as romantics within a normal harmonic system, however much it was extended, but they didn't stay there. And they moved on to try to reorder the way music was composed and heard. And mostly it's music that does not touch the heart. It can touch the mind, and the educated listener can say, oh, how interesting. But it doesn't, you know, when you hear the last movement of Beethoven's Ninth Choral Symphony, you're thrilled because of the Buddhic quality of it, and the setting of the Ode to Joy by Schiller. You know it. Okay, excuse me. So when you hear that, you know, it just takes you to the Buddhic plane. Well, the breakdown of harmonies as we have known them, or had known them for maybe 500 years, did not take you to the Buddhic plane. It was intellectually interesting, and we're still suffering, in my point of view, within that breakdown. And we've lost the key to the true harmony of the heart, which somehow must be restored. And it is restored in more popular music and in folk music, but maybe not in the highly academic music. I speak here as a person who went through music school and went through composition classes and all of that, and I noticed how the compositions were being made, and I was entirely against it, and I stuck with the old system in songs and other things, and I still do. But, you know, to each is their own orientation. And DK's presentation here is really very simple. It is Pythagorean. There are many frequency modifications depending on how the scale is divided and the proportions, that what do they call them? Frequency proportions differ. With different modalities, different modes. But generally speaking, the idea of the ratio will define the type of scale that you are using, where certain notes are allowed and certain notes are not allowed. You know, if you go far enough into the East, you'll find the use of the pentatonic scale, which has only five tones and not seven, like the Western diatonic scale, Well, five is the number of Brahma. It's inherited from the past, and the East promoted that. When we got to Western civilization, the diatonic scale with seven divisions in the eightfold scale came in, and we did not, pentatonic music can be very beautiful, of course. And if you listen to, you know, Chinese and generally Eastern music, you'll find a lot of use of the pentatonic five-note scale. At the same time, some of the greatest virtuosi who are playing Western music are coming from the East. I don't know what reincarnations they are, but great cellists and violinists and conductors, you know, coming right from the heart of the fourth root race types. So there's a whole change going on beneath the surface. And the new music, which DK says will be developed, has not yet been developed. I think it will all be part of the coming Renaissance, the first product of which will be in the written and spoken word. The second product will be in the visual arts, and I think finally music will be the third. And coming out of certain kinds of folk music and also coming out of harmonic singing, you know, where you get the overtone, you've heard that kind of flute-like overtones that ride above the main note. My voice is not in the condition right now where I can demonstrate that, but it's quite popular today, and you'll see that it's not emotionally based. You know, grand opera, you're pretty much singing out of the solar plexus, and DK doesn't so much approve of that in terms of the effect of music. I mean, some of it can be very beautiful and can bring you through an emotional catharsis, but he has something different in mind, something more celestial in a way, something more mathematical, something more esoteric for the music of the future, and there are those who experiment accordingly. And that experimentation is beginning. I'm not saying we're there, but there are certain composers that produce a music which now really seems to be transitional from the established music of the past and its beautiful nature and the possibility of having beautiful music in the future. The 12-tone transition and the highly intellectual ordering of things may be against the order of nature, I think. Has been interesting, but not beautiful, at least in my sense, that beauty must involve the heart. So all of us, you know, we have the Aquarian Age before us. How many incarnations will that mean for each of us? Probably a fair number, and we shall experience some of these wonders of the new age. And I think, you know, with the fourth ray now coming in its monadic aspect, whatever that means, maybe it means that those who have a fourth ray ingredient in their major monadic structure or subsidiary monadic structure will be taking incarnation. And sometimes he says, yes, the fourth ray is war, but at the same time, there's no reason to despair because it does bring harmony and peace. And we know from the New Testament and the writings of the apostles that there will come a time following the Great War, which may have already pass, the Armageddon, when the reign of peace will settle down on humanity for, I call it a symbolic 1,000 years. And the Christ will be increasingly in charge and the point of great motivation for so many people. So all of this we have to look forward to, and I know there appear to be many distressing factors with which we are being presented. But it may be true what Master Moria says, the worse the better, and that obstacles are possibilities. I know it's kind of a first-rate attitude, and maybe no one wants to be confronted with a pandemic and with social revolutions and with violent, frictional conflicts between the races and the religions, you know, and some of that seems to be shaping up. Nobody wants that. But at the same time, if we rise to the occasion, we will see our way through the conflict into a beautiful harmony, which is the higher soul quality of humanity. And humanity's rays will change. Right now, I think we have the fourth ray soul and the fifth ray personality. And in time, when we don't know, but it will change to a second ray soul and a fourth ray personality. Incidentally, being the rays of the Occident at this time. 4-3 is what we have. So interesting, you know. 4-3 is what we have in the East, the fourth ray soul, third ray personality. And when you put those two things together, you get the green. You get the fourth, not the augmented fourth, but the, well, maybe can we call it the perfect fourth, you know, our here comes the bride interval. Dum, dum, da-dum. That's the green interval. Well, when you move to the west, you get 2 and 4, or 4 and 2. Or maybe it would be 2 and 1, you get the octave. So you're much more likely to bring in the perfect fifth and to bring in the octave. First, I would say, if occultism is moving to the west, which DK says it is, we have to bring in the perfect fifth. Bum, 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 at 3-2. And then eventually we're going to learn, probably in the West, that, but in combination with the East, what the octave really means. Bum, bum, bum. That will be the completion of the great chord that the Tibetan is talking about. Well, okay, friends, you know, this particular, you know, we're stopping now at a point. A letter from June 2nd is coming up, and it's going to be about microcosmic and macrocosmic alignment. And, you know, we'll take that up when we next start, whether it's today or another day. And we have completed this section on the chord of the ego. Maybe not made a whole lot of progress in terms of pagination, like maybe one page. But okay, that one page has so much depth in it, really. Extraordinary. And I've only just begun to get started. So I will, you know, get my orienting. Now they're purple. End of program number three. Today being the 19th of July, 2020. And basically we're moving from page four to, whoops, that's not good, four to five. And our next will be program number four, quite a different subject, I guess, program page number five, and we'll see when we do it. Will it be tonight? You know, obviously I would like to keep going with these things, but time and strength intervenes. But the funny thing is, and maybe it's true for you too, that once you begin to read the Tibetan, even to voice the Tibetan, give voice to his words, something happens. The energy changes. And I, you know, I can be in the most complete state of fatigue, which oftentimes keeps me from coming here and doing what I would like to do. And then I get going. And maybe it's so for you. And some energy from some place, okay, DK says, the master's words are special. They carry a vibration, they carry his vibration. And the next thing I know, I'm energized. And all the fatigue has fled. So, you know, I recommend that to you. There may be 5 years left before the era of the forerunner is over. And then who knows what? Let's see. You know, it'll be a time when the new installment is being given out. The new installment of the teaching in this series of bridging treatises. And we've received such a rich endowment through the two previous installments, the Blavatsky installment, and even more recently, the Alice Bailey, more voluminously in a way, on many, many subjects with the Tibetan supervising on all of them. What will the third installment be? So that's truly exciting to contemplate the future in that way. And I would just recommend, don't stop studying. You know, after many years of work with this material, a person can develop a certain fatigue. You know, I've read that before, you know, and well, I'll never understand that, or, oh, I already understand that. But we have to keep on keeping on with our studies, which will feed the acuteness of our meditation, its penetrating power, its service power. We have to put the pressure on ourselves for the next 5 years, and then it will appear to us, perhaps because the word is given around the year 2025, maybe it'll be 2025 itself, 2026, or I don't know, maybe something in 2024. We know it hasn't emerged yet. For all the claims that people make, and they may be very intelligent and useful people, they make claims about, you know, being the conveyor of the next installment and so forth. Well, you know, it just doesn't add up. So we look forward during the next 5 years to an ever closer approach to the next installment of this great, exhilarating, uplifting, inspiring, can I find the words, teaching, which harkens me back to Madame Blavatsky saying, for some people, theosophy is their last hope. Sometimes I feel like I'm one of those. And maybe, you know, we've all rung many changes in this ongoing ladder or journey. You know, is it horizontal? Is it vertical? It's both of evolution. You know, from instinctuality to emotionality to intellectuality to soul perspective and beyond, we have had a lot of incarnations. Some of them quite negligible, not amounting to much, not taking us very far. Some of those incarnations taking us backwards because of the poor choices we've made. But now the doors are open, if we can understand that, and so adjust our sense of values that we really pay attention to the most essential things, basically to meditate, study, and serve. Well, I know I've dilated quite a bit in this particular program. But of course, the whole Pythagorean idea is to me a source of great inspiration. The meaningfulness of music in its philosophical, its cosmic sense even. And music is one of the great keys to unlocking the mysteries of our planet, our solar system, and beyond. So we'll get this to you as soon as possible on the car. And my friend and colleague of a long time, and Joe Waltz, who has done so much beautiful work here, they collaborate to get these kinds of programs up on YouTube where more people can witness them or, you know, participate in them. And so be it. May we continue to live, love, and learn. Which is another way of saying, you know, monad soul personality. Okay, we'll see you soon. Hope all this has worked out. Many blessings, lots of love, and if I can come back in an hour, I will. Or 2 hours, I will, and if I can't, I won't.